welcome into the first ever Jayco and Espo show slash podcast, whatever you want to call it. I was really good at this song on Rock Band. Just so you know.
I'm afraid that's what the listeners are going to be doing. They're going to be screaming like that after they hear most of this. But
with excitement? Because
we have a lot of great stuff. Probably with anger.
This is the Jayco and Espo show.
I think you already said that.
I'm Jared Cohen. That's Greg Esposito, just to clarify. And what we do is we just talk Arizona sports and pop culture. That's kind of what we do. That's what we're into, and that's what we're going to talk about. So if you like that stuff, enjoy. And
if you don't, stay tuned anyways.
Yeah, you know, because you might find something you like. I like him a lot, so that's why we're sticking through this.
That's the first person to ever say that. I appreciate that, Jared.
That's why I'm here.
I've been told my voice is soothing, too, so if you can't fall asleep,
he has a very
listen
soothing
to the
voice.
Podcast.
Yep. Stick with it, though. Stick with it. So this is our first ever show. We're just kind of playing around here, figuring out what we want to talk about, what we don't want to talk about. But what we do know is it's sports and pop culture. And to talk sports first, Espo is the writer for the Local Motive on Sports360AZ.com. And this week's write-up had to do with Larry Fitzgerald. Trade rumors came down on Sunday morning before the Cardinals game when they faced the Atlanta Falcons. Adam Schefter reporting that if the Cardinals don't trade Larry Fitzgerald by Tuesday for the trade deadline, which looks to be coming and going pretty quickly here, he should be traded this offseason and a potential breakup could happen. Steve Keim hit the radio waves yesterday, a.k.a. Monday, and said that that's not going to happen. But well, either way,
what else is he going to say? He's not going to come out and go, hey, NFL, I'm going to lose all my leverage here. I'm trading Larry Fitzgerald, so now you can lowball me because I've said it out loud. He's not going to say that.
No, and that's what I really wanted to get into because Eric put up the Facebook question on the Sports360AZ.com fan page, and someone said, well, Keim just got onto their airwaves and said this, this, and that, and this is how they handle it, and he's not going to trade him, period. Exactly. You think he's going to get out there and say, oh, well, we'll listen, or oh, well, we'll talk about it? He will get hung and tarred and feathered before that could even happen if he agreed that that's what they're going to go and do.
You cannot come out and say that that's your plan. It's like playing poker. You don't go, hey, I got three aces over here. None of you raise me because I got everything that's going to win. I got the winning hand.
Or you say, hey, I'm bluffing, yeah. So call my bluff right now.
No, but the problem is people will believe whatever they're told. And this is a case of it. Of course Steve Keim's going to say that. He wouldn't be doing his job right if he said differently. Any general manager in any sport will deny a trade rumor like that because you lose all leverage.
Especially with the player of the caliber of Larry Fitzgerald.
Yeah. I mean, of course. If you're talking about arguably a superstar, I still believe Larry Fitzgerald's a superstar. It's just the fact that they've had the garbage pail kids throwing to him the last 3 years since Kurt Warner left. If you're dealing a superstar, you don't, A, come out and say that you're doing it because then you create a disgruntled superstar, even though it's hard to believe Larry Fitzgerald could ever be disgruntled about anything, and then you weaken the market for him. The rumors are the market right now is a second and a sixth round pick anyways. Why do that? No. Why deal Larry Fitzgerald for what is a pretty pathetic return, in at least my opinion? When you look at it, Cardinals have been missing two things in their time in the Valley: a bona fide superstar and a franchise quarterback that they could grow with. Larry Fitzgerald solved one of those. Obviously, he is the superstar that they had been missing in their time here. He's in national ads. He's still one of the better receivers in the game. Some people, Eric Sorensen, would argue that that's not the case, that he's no longer elite. But I don't think we can make that judgment. He's only 30. We've seen plenty of receivers still play well late into their 30s. It's the fact that he has nobody throwing to him and hasn't since Kurt Warner left.
And that's what I was going to mention. Look what it looked like when there was an elite thrower throwing to him. They almost won the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
And they went to the playoffs again after that and just ran into a New Orleans Saints team that was bounty-filled and firing on all cylinders.
Yeah.
And so they had a great run.
And he's still setting records. The same day that this rumor comes out, he sets the record for the fastest to 800 receptions in league history. Imagine if he had the kind of quarterbacks that that one Jerry Rice had, a guy that has set a majority of the NFL receiving records, Larry Fitzgerald with a guy like a Joe Montana or a Steve Young obliterates these records. Mm-hmm. And you mentioned the playoff run, the Super Bowl run. He set playoff records when he had a halfway decent quarterback. You cannot tell me it is easier to deal Larry Fitzgerald than it is to find an average to above average quarterback. You just can't. It's like getting, and I mentioned this in a column, it's like getting a A-list celebrity, a Brad Pitt, to agree to do your television show, and then you can't find a bit actor to do the second part, so you go, eh, you know what, let's blow it up rather than actually try. It does not make any sense. You keep a guy like Larry Fitzgerald.
The two biggest problems that the Cardinals have that are keeping them from being one of the elites in the NFC West and in the NFC and the NFL, quarterback play that you mentioned and offensive line play, two things that just have not been addressed in the draft. They did address it this year finally with Cooper. And unfortunately for the Cardinals, Cooper's forced to miss the entire season. But before that was Levi Brown. And that was, what, 2000 and what?
Five?
Yeah. So since 2005, you have had one first-round pick as an offensive lineman, and that was this past year. You have to build through there. You have to throw money towards an offensive lineman. Signing Eric Winston past his prime is not going to solve your problems, even though he was a very serviceable and solid offensive lineman in the past. So dealing Larry Fitzgerald at this point is counterproductive. I like Michael Floyd a lot. Andre Roberts is very good. But to lose a superstar with already a squad on the other side of the football that is proven to be one of the most elite in the NFL, the defense just looks incredible. I feel like that's a backward step.
It's a huge backward step for the offense that has been the issue this year. And anybody that's telling you this year it's the offensive line's fault is, I don't even know how to put it kindly. They're on something because it is, unless that offensive line is impeding the brain waves that Carson Palmer has going on and causing him to make these poor decisions, which I don't think it is. It's usually not because he's running for his life or he's being hurried. He's just making bad decisions and throwing interceptions. Yes, you need to work on the offensive line moving forward, but you can't tell me if they had a guy like an Alex Smith, a game manager, somebody that's not going to make stupid mistakes, that this offense wouldn't at least be marginally better.
We're the Jayco and Espo Show. That's Greg Esposito. I'm Jared Cohen. We talk sports and pop culture. This is our first ever podcast.
Or popcast, so, whatever you want to call it.
I like popcast better. and so that's kind of where we're at with the Larry Fitzgerald situation. Like we mentioned, it doesn't look like it's going to happen by the trade deadline, and thankfully, because that would just seem like they totally rushed into this and made a snap decision. The one thing that people are bringing to the surface is how much money he's owed in the offseason. What is it, $19 million that he's owed, and they're going to look to possibly restructure his contract to help with the cap space. I get that, but at the same time, you knew that this was coming. You have to... When you sign someone to a contract of the caliber of Larry Fitzgerald, you know it's something that you're going to have to plan around. And I just think it's a lousy excuse to bolt on him because of cap space reasons.
Well, and you're already going to take the $10 million hit, so it's really an $8 million savings. What I think is people will talk about draft picks. In the NFL, more than any other sport, the draft is a complete crapshoot. It just is. You want to talk about a second-round pick, how valuable that is? Let's talk to Ryan Williams and see how valuable he's been to this team. He hasn't gotten off the bench. You see guys in the fifth, sixth rounds make impacts in the NFL draft just as much sometimes as
Andre Ellington.
Picks. Yeah.
Andre Ellington has become the steal of the draft in the sixth round.
Yeah. And you look at everybody will bring it. Well, Darrell Washington, second round pick. Well, like I said, Ryan Williams, second round pick. There's hits and misses.
So, Matt Leinart, first-round pick.
Yeah, you don't trade what you know you have in a superstar when you're not really in a rebuilding mode. You're in a, let's figure out how we can compete because we've got a supreme defense, a superstar on offense, and no quarterback to get him the ball. This isn't a complete rebuild. So why would you trade possibly your best offensive weapon for draft picks?
Doesn't make sense to me either. Nope. Don't do it. Don't do it. Stick with what you have. Build on it because you have the pieces in place. That's the moral of this story. First ever topic on the J. Cohen and Espo show. Let's stick with Arizona sports here for our next topic. We asked the question because we're kind of in the dark days of Arizona sports these days. The Diamondbacks are underperforming, not meeting expectations. The Cardinals, you know, are kind of middle of the pack, not in the lottery, like top pick situation, but not in the playoffs. The dog days of the Suns have begun. But so if there was one player, I ask this to you guys listening, and we'll get into this as well. I ask you, Espo, if there's one player that you can bring back for one game, who would it be? And we get to this topic because of a situation that could have arisen because of Jalen Rose opening his big mouth.
Yeah, he mentioned that Michael Jordan at the ripe old age of 50 could play one game this season, and he's probably making it up. There's probably nothing behind it, but it brought up an interesting subject. Got me thinking about it. Initially, everything in me says Charles Barkley because I'm probably the biggest Charles Barkley fan you'll meet. Grew up loving him, would love to see him out there, but I got to thinking about it a little more. I think it's Connie Hawkins. You can't find any real good footage of Connie Hawkins in his heyday. I would love to see him play in person. If we can get in the time machine, we can bring him back for one game only in his prime. I'd love to see him because you hear he was Dr. J before Dr. J. He was an unbelievable athletic freak. I've talked with Al McCoy, and he's talked about him before and just how unbelievable it was to watch Hawk in person. I'd love to see him one time.
You know, I took this question two different ways. One, like that, seeing a player that we either didn't see because we weren't alive or we don't remember that well because we were young. I took that angle of it, and then I also took the angle of it of what would the teams in the state need now to be able to get over the hump? To take the first angle, the more that you took, the Connie Hawkins angle of it, I agree with Connie Hawkins, the Larry Nances of the world. I would love to go back and watch Sean Elliott. I mean, Sean Elliott, I was alive when he was playing, but I was very young. But everyone says that Sean Elliott is... And just watching the footage that you still are have the privilege of seeing, that Sean Elliott in his prime while he was at the University of Arizona was one of the greatest players ever to put on a Wildcat uniform. And I would love to see him in his prime play at the college level because I think, I mean, for U of A this year, and this is also, it would impact them this year. This is kind of the other angle that I took with this question. U of A needs a shooter. They got all this talent, all this heralded prospect talent on their team, the Aaron Gordons and Rondae Hollis Jefferson, even Nick Johnson was heralded. But they don't have that guy that can just step back and knock down threes. Kind of like that kid on Louisville in the championship game last year, or the semifinals, where he just came in the first half and knocked down like five or six threes?
Yeah, just lit it up.
He was the difference maker in that first half. U of A doesn't have that guy. So if I needed one person to shoot up right away and knock down shots, it would be Steve Kerr or Sean Elliott for U of A basketball this year.
I think Steve Kerr at 50 could still do it without having a time machine to go back and get him. If you're just spotting him up in the corner, shooters don't lose the touch.
They don't.
I mean, take Channing Frye, for example. He took a year off because of health issues, and he can still hit the three like nobody's business. He'll have an impact with that. I'm sure Steve Kerr is exactly the same way right now. If you stepped out on the court,
so if U of A fan needed a guy to suit up for them for one game this year, I would pick Steve Kerr or even Salim Stoudemire just to be that guy, just to shoot and be an impact player in a first half of a national championship game.
Just pick Damon Stoudemire; he'll just literally come off the bench now that he's a coach.
He is there,
make the impact. I mean, there you go.
The other guy,
synergy. That's what we.
The
call
other
that.
Guy I was thinking was, and this could play into both factors as well of. Wanting to see them because of how great they were, but also needing them now presently would be Randy Johnson. I did grow up seeing Randy Johnson. I watched him pitch. There was nothing like it. I remember the perfect game like it was yesterday. I remember where I was. I remember the World Series performances. And if there was anything that the Diamondbacks needed this year to hold on against the Dodgers in that race and needed an ace in the worst way, it was a guy like Randy Johnson.
Yeah, I would love to. Watching him in his prime, I don't think we realized how lucky we were, how dominant he was, and just how impressive, especially that 99 year and that 2001. You're just how amazing he was every time he got on the mound. Rarely, and I don't think there's anybody in the game right now like this. Did you know when that guy stepped on the mound that 95% of the time you were going to walk away with a win? If you were in a skid, he was the definition of an ace in baseball. If you were in a losing streak, he ended it. Mm-hmm. If you needed that pick-me-up because your offense was in a slump, he gave it to you because you knew that other team wasn't going to get more than a run off of him.
Yeah.
He was amazing. I would love to watch
him. You know who was that one guy until this season started? Was Justin Verlander. Justin Verlander was that guy last year up until this season for the Tigers, but he kind of lost his way a little bit there.
And not the same kind of domination. There was just something about Randy, whether it was the mullet, the fact that he was 6'10", that fastball was and how that breaking ball would just dive off on hitters. There was just, there was something about the intimidation factor with Randy Johnson. And it's sad the only time we now see him on the field is when he's a giant-headed legends racer. You know, that's kind of sad now.
Or see some of his photos surface because he's now like a nature photographer.
Rock concerts, too.
Rock concerts, too. We'll throw that in there. Part of what we do on the Jayco and Espo show is we also talk pop culture because this is a popcast, right? I've already mentioned that.
You're having trouble with the talk part, but we still do it, yeah.
This is a podcast. So make sure you stick with us here because what we're going to bring you every week is not an ESPY award being given to a sports team or player for doing something great. We're going to give out an ESPO award for failures in sports, and we're going to do that every week. That's coming up at the end. But before we get to that, on a podcast pop culture note, Anchorman 2 is in the news. Can't wait for this movie to come out. I know you can't wait either. You're going to get the no shave November thing going, and you're going to get that mustache out ready for Thanksgiving time for that movie to come out.
I will be having I do Movember every November, and I usually only keep it till the very last day of November. But this bad boy is staying through December 20th when Anchorman 2 comes out because you have to go with the stash. Actually, in the middle of Movember last year, I got a chance to meet Judd Apatow, and he was talking how Anchorman-ish my mustache was. So I feel I'm required to keep that mustache through the premiere of Anchorman 2.
If you have a gift, why fight it?
I know.
You utilize that gift for the good of mankind.
I do, and it is going to be spectacular.
So, and speaking of the movie itself, it will be spectacular. Yes. But the news that came down about this movie is the fact that they had enough improvisational footage for an entire second movie.
Yes, which is awesome.
It's amazing.
They said there was enough jokes that they could intertwine that every joke in the movie could be replaced by another one and it would be just as funny. I don't think I've ever heard of that much footage being shot for a movie, but I want to see the second movie. I will go see the first one, midnight showing, and if they released a second one a week later, I'd be at another midnight showing.
And it makes you wonder, why not do that?
They probably will. I bet what they do is they'll release two different Blu-rays, one of the theatrical release and then a second re-edited with all the improvisational stuff because you're going to make extra money. Like, why not?
Why not?
You said, I think it should be brilliant. I know a lot of people have seen those truck commercials.
Which they shot like 70-something takes and kept them all?
Yeah. They've done 70 different ones. They did 70 different ones, improvised a majority of it by Will Ferrell as Ron Burgundy. And then they've released, you know, some of them on YouTube. You're seeing some of them on TV. It's brilliant because it's just ridiculous. And that's what we love about Ron Burgundy and the whole Anchorman crew. Everybody was so ridiculous. And if you've ever worked in media, you know certain people like that.
Yeah.
It's a very funny concept.
It's perfect.
I'm not saying Brad Sesmat is Ron Burgundy. I've never seen him read off a teleprompter, but I've seen some guys that would read anything on a teleprompter.
It's very true.
I'm thinking Jayco might be one of those guys after some of his speaking today.
I need a teleprompter in the worst way.
I think you'd still find a way to screw call it, up. It a podcast.
I'd still call it a podcast. I can't wait for that movie to come out. Who's your favorite character in that movie?
I would say It's tough. They're all great. Ron's the easy answer. Brick.
I'm a big Brian Fantana fan.
Brian, they're all great. My underappreciated character, Ron's dog. Yeah. Ron's dog is fantastic.
Baxter.
He ate an entire wheel of cheese, and Ron wasn't even mad about it.
It was amazing.
It
was amazing.
I think he's an underrated character, but there are so many quotable things from each of those characters. I'm excited, and I probably do one of those showings where they show the original one, and then they show the midnight showing of the second one. It's kind of in our wheelhouse. Came out when we were in high school, college, so we probably overquoted it back in the day, and we will continue to do so with number two.
Of course, it brings the extreme maturity out of us. That's for sure.
Yes.
Staying on the movie front, though,
and speaking of extreme maturity, look at that. That's a transition.
That's a good one. Well, Johnny Knoxville. Yep, Johnny Knoxville. Extreme maturity. It's a great segue. Bad Grandpa. That just came out.
We actually probably should have called this show Extreme Maturity the way it's going.
That's good.
Bad Grandpa was the number one movie. It overtook Gravity. It had $32 million at the box office. And I don't know whether to be scared by that fact or excited to see this film, because it is scary that Gravity is one of the better actual films I've seen in years.
And in which movie, they put loads and loads of money into, I'm sure.
Yeah, and it was brilliantly done, great acting. And yet Johnny Knoxville, dressed as an old guy, toting around a larger child that's supposed to be his grandson, overtook it.
Welcome to 2013, Espo.
It's not an Espo award-worthy thing, but no. I just find it interesting. And I'll probably laugh pretty hard when I go see it this weekend. I'll probably be part of the problem rather than the solution. But
and, you know, speaking of this, we like to spin things local. That's kind of the whole mantra of Sports 360 AZ, but to spin Bad Grandpa local, don't know if you heard about this or not.
Do we have to shame our university with this?
I think we do. I think we do, just because it's just amazing. It's amazing to me.
It's something.
So Sigma Alpha Epsilon, SAE, down at U of A, they were granted the opportunity to be a part of a promo that was shot for Bad Grandpa while they were doing their big media tours. And so Johnny Knoxville and his team went to Tucson. They went to SAE and they shot promos and they had a party of grandpa partying with all the college kids. This was approved by the university because they were under the impression that no alcohol was going to be involved.
That was their first mistake.
That is my favorite excuse ever. Having been a fraternity guy down at U of A.
Oh, wait, you were one of those guys?
I was a fraternity guy at U of A.
I like you a little less than I did before we started this.
You like me a lot, because I just told you how much I like you. So, and you're instantly judging me now. So, anyways, knowing that stance is funny to me. But what happens is there were drinks involved, and someone slipped some ecstasy into Johnny Knoxville, a.k.a. Bad Grandpa's drink, and he ended up getting sick by it. There's an investigation going on, yada, yada, yada. The funniest thing that came out of this, though, Espo, and you mentioned it too, was the fact that he knew what was wrong with him. He knew exactly what was wrong with him and what was going on.
What do you expect from a guy that is famous because he was on a show named Jackass? Of course he knows what. We can say that word on. It's a title,
it's a podcast.
Right?
Yeah.
All right. he knew it. Because he's probably been on it numerous times before.
Wouldn't put it past him.
Probably for stunts they've done. You have to be on something to get kicked in the places that he's been kicked numerous times. So none of it surprises me. And it shouldn't surprise Johnny Knoxville. Somebody pranked a guy that pranks people for a living. Who would have guessed?
You would think
not a funny prank.
It didn't sound like he was too upset about it, though.
No,
it sounded like he was joking about it. But that was the story within the story that I thought was most funny, was the fact that he knew exactly what was wrong with him and just went with it.
Yeah. By the way, I love that we're transitioning from this to my little segment here at the end. It seems apropos.
Somehow. It's time for the first ever Espo Award, and soon we're going to have a fancy intro for this. You know, that's part of what we're working through. But here it is, the Espo Award. You see the ESPY Awards. It's the greatest night in sports, where they honor and celebrate the biggest names in sports, the best teams, the best stories. Here on the JCO and Espo Show, we provide a weekly Espo Award, which honors, I guess you could say, for lack of a better term, the failures in sports. And this failure in sports is just very puzzling. I'll let you take it away.
Yeah, this comes from Texas and the big high school football realm that is Texas. Some of you may have heard the story, but Aledo High School defeated Fort Western Hills 91-0. All right.
Ouch.
You would think maybe I was going to give Fort Western the Espo for, you know,
losing,
getting shut out and giving up 91 points. That's bad for a basketball defense in high school, let alone a football one. No, I'm not going to rip on high school kids. Why would I do that? They're out there trying their hardest. They're just kids trying to enjoy what they do. No, I'm going to rip the parents from Fort Worth Western Hills High School who tried to sue and put in a complaint about bullying and charge this against the coach Tim Buchanan of Aledo. They tried to claim that this guy and this team bullied their children because they won 91-0. Now, Buchanan had his third stringers in by the second quarter. Come the fourth quarter, in Texas, there is no mercy rule in their football. Surprise, surprise. No mercy when it comes to high school football in the Longhorn State. Instead of, you know, just trying to play by the rules, no. Buchanan goes to the refs in the third quarter and says, hey, can we get a running clock? Doesn't happen. In the fourth quarter, he pushes it again, finally gets a running clock. He's trying to kill the clock. It's not his fault that his team was superior to these kids, but the parents didn't care. They still put in a complaint and claimed in the complaint when it said, name any witnesses, they said, quote, everybody in the stadium witnessed this bullying. Now, there's no mercy rule in life. I'm sorry. Bullying is a very serious thing.
Extremely serious.
This is not bullying. No. There's no mercy rule in life. When your children get out there, when they graduate high school, you know, and they're applying to colleges, or if they're juniors, they're applying to colleges, and they don't get in, nobody's there to hold their hand because and force their way into a better university. If they didn't do what they needed to, they're not going to get in where they want to go. Just like in the job market. You think it's easy in this job market?
No.
There is no mercy rule in life. You cannot complain unless you're prepared to be the parent who sits there and sues every time something bad happens to your child. When their boyfriend or girlfriend breaks up with them, sue them. That's bullying because they put them through emotional distress, and we can't have that.
That's a great point.
When they get fired from their job or their landlord kicks them out because they can't afford the rent, well, let's sue them. Because that's bullying. That's some emotional distress. You are creating what's going to be a 40-year-old child if you continue to do these kind of things for your kids. There is no mercy rule in life, and that's why the Fort Worth Western Hills High School parents who happen to think pushing bullying charges for losing 91-0 was a good idea. You win the Espo because, quite frankly, you know, if you keep doing that for your children, they're going to be part of the problem and not part of the solution moving forward.
That Espo Award is brought to you by Golden Tate.
Which is not an auto dealership, if you thought it was. It's actually a wide receiver.
Wide receiver who has apparently never caught in a touchdown before in his life and felt the need to make a fool of himself on national television.
Well, if he was playing receiver with some of the Cardinals quarterbacks over the last 3 years, that'd be believable, but we know he's caught him before with what Seattle has. So, yeah, that is the Espo there. I hope.
Yes, yes. Great, great. The only thing I'd like to just echo of what you said and how brilliantly you put it is bullying is an extremely serious problem in the world, mm-hmm. and let alone the country, let alone the state we live. It is a very serious issue. And to see grown people try to take a serious issue and try to put something that they themselves might be embarrassed about and put it into that category is so unbelievably offensive to me. It's a joke.
Yeah, if losing or emotional distress in sports counts as bullying, I should be suing every team in the state for what they've done to me since I was a child. It drives me nuts. I apologize if I got a little too serious on that.
No, need the serious.
I felt like a shorter, less talented Keith Olbermann during that rant, but that's the Espo, and I think that's in the books, the first edition, not another. We haven't done one before.
Hopefully we'll have another one.
I see E sitting out there staring at us, the producer behind the glass who apparently put the show on autopilot and If he's out, I don't know. We'll find out if we get a second edition.
So that'll do it for the first edition of the J. Cohen Espo Show. Greg Esposito, Jared Cohen will bring you a new one every week.
Maybe.
Maybe if they decide that we're worthy. Sports and pop culture and, of course, the heralded Espo Award. Make sure you continue to stay with us. J. Cohen Espo on Sports360AZ.com.